the sport doesn't stop, basically. So every time, you know, you're getting a misdiagnosis or something, they can't tell you what it is for sure. And, you know, you're seeing people training, you're seeing your teammates training, you're seeing races on TV. I think that was the hardest thing, just knowing that you should be there, but something's holding you back.
Welcome to the British Continental Podcast, brought to you by Continental. Continental have been supporters of the domestic road scene for over 25 years. The go-to tyre brand for elite riders, from the off-camber cobbled corners of the Durham Tour Series to the farm tracks of the Cycle Classic.
Hello and welcome to part two of our interview with Bahrain McLaren rider Stevie Williams. Those of you that have already listened to part one will have heard about Stevie's late beginnings to bike racing, his years riding at the domestic level for Pedal Heaven and JLT Condor, his switch to the SEG Racing Academy, and his career-changing ride at the Ronde de l'Isard. In this second part of the interview, Stevie and I chat about his successful Baby Giro back in 2018, his transfer to what was then called Bahrain Merida, and his fight back from an injury which threatened to derail his pro career before it had even begun. As it should be clear in the interview, it was a long, challenging road back to recovery for Stevie, and I'm especially grateful to him for being so open about both the physical and mental battles he has fought. The interview itself took place not long after his comeback race in the Czech Republic earlier this year. Now, Stevie has ridden in his first Grand Tour, finishing 10 stages of the Vuelta before retiring from the race. He may have been a little disappointed to leave the race early, but nonetheless, considering all he has been through, it should be regarded as a very successful end to his neo-pro years. Thanks as ever for tuning in. Here's part two. And your next race was the Baby Giro, the under 23 Giro. I think I followed that one quite closely at the time as best I could. It wasn't on TV, I don't think, but it seemed like an absolutely bonkers race from what I could understand. It often does.
Yeah.
But how was it for you? How would you describe it?
It was just, I don't even know what the word is, but it was just a typical under 23 stage race. That's the best way I can put it. Honestly, it was just, I think the leader's jersey changed hands for 10 days. So every day it had a new leader, or maybe the Colombian had it for 2 days, but other than that, it was on different shoulders for every day. And that basically says everything. So uncontrolled, so unpredictable, just chaos really most days. And just an absolute fantastic race. So the way it's organized, the routes, the scenery, it was just such a good race. The best race for sure. Best race of the year for sure.
And I mean, you held the leader's jersey, didn't you? So I think as the race hit the mountains, I think you had a couple of strong results. I think you were sixth on stage four, and then you were second on stage five, which then got you the leader's jersey.
Yeah, that's it. So the first mountain stage was sixth, like you said. Just sort of testing the water there, really, because it was just, I didn't even know what was going on. There was some riders in the break that still hadn't come back. And then by the time we finished, I think I finished maybe 10 seconds behind the winner. But in my head, I was like, the race is sort of gone. And then the day after, I finished second to, I can't remember the Colombian's name. I think it was about 5 seconds. He was in the break, and I attacked the group, and I almost got across to him. I was fuming at the time because I didn't win the stage. And then, obviously, 5-10 minutes later, I realised I was in the leader's jersey. So that was a nice feeling, really, really proud moment to wear that. Yeah, that was just a really nice moment for me, for the team, and then about trying to defend it, which didn't go too well the next day, to be fair.
What happened the next day? I mean, once you got in that jersey, did you then, I mean, particularly after your Ronde de l'Isard results, were you thinking this, you know, this is a race I could win?
Yeah, I think at the time you do think that, and I definitely thought I was the strongest in the race at the time, especially in the on the mountains. I knew with the time trial coming up that I had to take as much time as possible in the mountains. The next day, though, basically we let a group of four get away, and we didn't see them again. It was four. There was two guys in it who were too close to us on. Too close to me on GC, and then I think they finished with 2.5 minutes, and I think we were riding with the Russians, so the Russians were riding for Vlasov, Alexander Vlasov.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just didn't come back. They were motoring that day. So yeah, I moved down to third, but I don't know, it almost felt like at the time it wasn't the end of the world, because I was only maybe, can't remember exactly, maybe like 2 minutes back or minute and a half back, and I was sitting third. And then the next day, then I think I took my anger out on the stage, and then won that on my own, top of that mountain. So yeah, a bit like bittersweet really, but it's also nice to win a stage as well. So, you know, maybe if I stayed in the jersey, I wouldn't have won the stage, or, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But yeah, that's how it went anyway.
I think we did a little piece with you about that stage when I first set up the British Continental, but that was, I think you said at the time, it was one of your highlights of the year, perhaps potentially the highlight in terms of your achievements.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think the stage in was really special. I don't know why, but there was just something about it that was really, really hard stage, really... really cool finish. And just, I think from the disappointment of the day before to come out with a stage win the next day was fantastic. So, yeah, I was really proud of that.
And again, I guess it's one of those races where you look back at the people who are up there, and you realize that they're all, you know, they're all super talents who have gone on, you know, to prove themselves at the World Tour level to some degree, or, to a very large degree in some cases. I mean, Alexander Vlasov, of course, is having a great spell at the moment, who won Joao Almeida, if I've got that pronunciation right, having, you know, really riding well at the moment. Robert Stannard, Mark Donovan are both World Tour riders. So, you know, you were, all those riders, you know, have gone on to prove themselves. We'll talk about kind of what's happened since, but when you kind of look at the names you've been riding, you were riding with back then, is it difficult, you know, kind of seeing how well some of those guys are doing now? I mean, do you think yourself, you know, that could be me, or that should be me?
Yeah, I think you do that naturally to yourself. You always think about these things, especially with what's gone on with my knee. Been tough to take, for sure. Obviously, you know, you go from a year and a half ago to going, you know, toe-to-toe with these guys, to these guys being front of races and you're doing bloody squats in the gym. So yeah, it's a weird feeling, but it's just how it goes, you know, things swinging roundabouts, and, you know, it just, this is what's happened to me, and I just have to focus on myself and not try and look at what these guys are doing at the moment. But I think it also gives you confidence as well, knowing that, you know, when you do come back, you can come back to a level where is, you know, is good enough to compete, hopefully.
So back to the timeline, you, after the Giro, you continued your season. How, at what stage were you in contact with Bahrain and potentially other World Tour teams about stepping up?
June. It was really early, straight after the baby Giro. And I was in a lot of contact with my agents at SEG, Martijn and Elko and Bart, and had good discussions with them. And at the time, I spoke with Brent Copeland, maybe 45-minute, one-hour call. And since that call, I knew it just felt like a really good place to go and for me to progress and improve and turn into a, at the time, what would have been hopefully a good professional rider. So, yeah, that's when everything was sorted with the, with Bahrain, Merida, and I think it was announced maybe in the beginning of July or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite early, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So quite early on, you felt that was the right move for you.
Yeah, it was just a really good chat, to be honest, with Brent. And basically usually you get a feeling from a team on the first phone call you have, and that communication with somebody, and obviously with the riders they had on the team, Vincenzo, obviously to learn off him, learn off all these experienced guys on the team, Hausler, you know, it just felt like a good opportunity and a great place to grow.
Talk about what happened then. So you obviously signed for Bahrain and you know, you continued your season. When did the injury occur? When did that start to, or when did that flare up, basically?
Yeah, so I continued with the season with SEG. I did at the Tour of Alsace. I hit the deck hard on the first stage. Did a front flip in a crosswind and landed on my back. Pretty sore, to be fair. And then I struggled through that race. And then I did Tour of L'Avenir again, Tour of L'Avenir part two, in 2018, and went a bit better, to be fair. Got round at least. But I don't know, it just, the second part of the season, I just never sort of found that form again. I know you can't hold form for 10 months in the season, but I was pretty disappointed really with how L'Avenir went. You know, you always want to ride well in your nation in the GB kit, and I was just pretty gutted I couldn't do that really. And I was at an okay level, but not nowhere enough to be, you know, competing for stages or especially not the overall. And then what was that? And then Tour of Britain, the idea then, speaking to Keith Lambert, the GB coach, obviously with the trying to target the world, I thought that I could, with the course being in Austria, really hilly, I wanted to go there and try and do a good ride. So we tried to use Tour of Britain as a race to sort of find my legs again. I did feel a lot better in Tour of Britain, found my feet a bit and was climbing a bit better. And then I got to the Worlds and I just didn't have gas, to be honest. And that was probably the most gutted I've been to date, probably, for in terms of going into races with form, you know, because the Worlds is such a big event and that's really one place you want to perform on the day. And, you know, obviously you just want to make the most of that opportunity, but I couldn't. So, it felt like a season of two tails. Obviously one being a major high and the other more of a trying second part of the season, but, it goes like this and, I've just got to be happy with, how the whole year went, to be honest. But it was almost just like, just a bit of tiredness, I think, as well. I think that year up to the Worlds, I raced like 75, 80 race days, which was almost double than what I did the previous year. So maybe that had an effect, but it's hard to say, you know, I could have just been terrible at the time, you know? So yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I often get the impression that happens at the end, particularly in the under 23 level where, you know, riders who do well in first part of the season don't, you know, rarely hold it all the way through. I think even, you know, I think Pavel Sivakov following year, I think it was, you know, he won pretty much everything in the first half of the year, but he you know, then by the time the Tour de l'Avenir hit, I don't think he wasn't on top form there. So I get the impression it's a difficult trick to actually kind of hold that kind of form the whole year through.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the answers to know whether it's possible or not, but I just felt like I just couldn't really, and I just didn't have that. I just didn't have the quality and the fitness at the time, and you know, whether it's to do with the race days or just not being good enough and not being going well enough, and it's just something that you can't really look back on, and you've just got to, you know, maybe hopefully try and learn from it, or you know. But I just sometimes think as well, what did I want to you know achieve that year. You know, I sat down at the start of the year on training camp in January, targets for the first half of the season, you know, knowing it was my last year as an under-23, to move on and, you know, to get those results early and then to secure my future. So I'd rather have won those races rather than, you know, get top 10s in every race of the year, you know? You know, so you just got to think like that. Would I have rathered top 10 every stage race of the year, or won a few stages, won some GC, and then, you know, not do anything in the second half of the year. So, you know, it's two tails, isn't it? And it's how it goes. But, you know, a lot of people will think of it differently. But, yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah. So is mission accomplished in the sense that, you know, the overall aim was to get a World Tour contract, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So tell me about the injury then. So that happened in the winter.
Yeah, so I had an off season. I had maybe like 4 or 5 weeks off the bike completely, just chilled out. And then I got back on the bike in November 2018. Yeah. And I felt like this pain on the side of my knee. On the insertion of the hamstring that connects to the head of the fibula. And as you do with anything, when you feel pain, you just think, oh, I'll get home, sleep on it tomorrow, hopefully it'll be all right. And the next day, it was the same. Day after, a bit worse. Same, bit worse. It was just like a week of just pain still. So I shut it down, took a couple of easy weeks again, icing it and, you know, massage, doing all these things. And then it just wasn't going away. Literally just wasn't going away. Every time I woke up, it was there, pain everywhere, pain every day, which was horrific. And yeah, that was basically just, that's what's obviously has happened over the last year and a half, as most people know now. But yeah, things are looking up. But yeah, at the time, it was just such a weird, weird feeling.
Mm. And it took a while to, from what I understand, to actually find out exactly what was wrong. Is that right?
Yeah. So the first person I saw, the first doctor, physio, still was a bit unclear, really. A lot of people thought it was just inflammation around the tendon, which it technically was, but obviously, as I'll say in a second, what it turned out to be. So I did a lot of ultrasound and did a lot of shockwave therapy, a lot of massage, a lot of exercises. And I left the training camp early in Hvar with the team, and I got sent to Man City to see the doctor and physio there in the training ground. And yeah, they had a good look at me. I think I was there for about 2 or 3 weeks, but still just nothing like happening. And it was just like it just felt like by this point, it was like a month of pain. I was like, you started to get a bit panicky then, you know? And then what happened then? And then it was maybe a month later, I saw the guys at Sport Wales, and they initially thought I had some CT scans, some MRI scans, x-rays, and initially thought it was hamstring tendinopathy, which it was. So we did like a 3-month load-in process, easy on the bike, and then just like loading it really heavy, isometric stuff and all this gym program. And it got to a point where it was manageable to ride, but it would just come back straight away, which we couldn't get our head around. And then I was just still in pain. And then August last year, we went to London, 40th Clinic, see Simon Ball, surgeon, and John Houghton, a tendon specialist, and came to the conclusion that there was a fibula, which is a little small bone impinging on the back of the hamstring. So basically every time I was moving my leg or in a pedaling motion, this bone was like running across the hamstring. So obviously, you know, if you're moving your leg 100 times a minute for 4 hours, it's you know, it's going to have an effect. So then November last year, they did surgery, operated on me and took that bone out, and been doing my rehab for 3 or 4 months. And then I got back on the bike and it's just gradually getting better and better. So, yeah, that's the story of the knee. So quite a absolute awful, torrid time, but, finally nice to be back on the bike and getting somewhere.
Mm. Going back to the beginning, what was your reaction at the time? And I mean, you know, you'd obviously just joined Bahrain. You're about to start your first season as a Neo Pro. I guess you were, I imagine, you know, beyond excited and motivated to get going. How, you know, when the injury problems started, what was your reaction at the time?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, the first couple of weeks, you're like, oh, it's all right, it's fine, it's just a little niggle. I've been off the bike for a while, it'll just take time, a bit of massage, I've got tight, or I'm not used to it, or I've got a new saddle, or my cleat's a bit out, or something like that. But yeah, it soon became a reality of this was more serious. And obviously, as time went on, you start to worry, start to panic that this isn't going to go away. And yeah, it got to the point where, I was just like, obviously, when you sign for a World Tour team, the first thing you want to do is make a good impression, race well, train well, you know, be visible on training camps, be visible in races. But obviously, I just couldn't do that. So it was tough to take. It was a kick in the teeth. But, you know, it's these... the end of the day, I had really good support from the team, really good support from, you know, friends and family, really good support from, you know, national governing body, Welsh Cycling, Sport Wales, all these people, you know. And when all these people come together and they all have one incentive to make you better, then, you know, you've really got to have trust and trust the process. And that's what I've done. And, you know, hopefully now, and fingers crossed, you know, we're fully out the woods and, you know, I can start racing properly and, you know, racing more consistently, and everything will start falling into place how it should be.
Yeah. The great video you did with Lawrence Carpenter kind of highlighted the kind of support you've had along the way. What can you describe a little bit more about, you know, what's been happening behind you in terms of the different people that have helped you?
Yeah, so I've obviously had the support from the team, the support from Sport Wales. So they've been the two parties and they've calibrated really well together. Collaborated, that's the one. So they've been working closely together, speaking, I think, every week. They have a group call and they discuss my progress, discuss what I've been doing and how I've been doing. And just to have, basically, how that makes me feel is gives me confidence to know that, you know, they're working really closely together to, you know, look at the best way to support me and help me. And they've been absolutely brilliant. And without their support, it'd be a different story, I think. But in terms of what the rehab looked like, it was really just how you imagine it, in and out of the gym, really. That was pretty much 6 months of just gym, home, 4 days a week, sometimes at the start, five days a week. And it gradually became 2 days a week. And now I'm able to ride, so it's nothing. But yeah, it was, it was tough. It was a pretty dark moment. It was frustrating. It was emotional. I won't wish it on anybody. I worked with a sports psychiatrist for a couple of months, which helped as well. Just because it was such a long time, you know, it was literally a year and a half of just not being able to be in the proper routine of knowing, you know, and just the unknown and the uncertainty of what this needs, you know, up to. So, yeah, that was pretty much how it went.
Mm. Yeah. I'd imagine the kind of repeated setbacks, the continual feeling that you're never quite getting to the bottom of it must have been hugely frustrating.
Yeah, it was. It was basically you're just like, you know, when the sport doesn't stop, basically. So every time, you know, you're getting a misdiagnosis or something, they can't tell you what it is for sure. And, you know, you're seeing people training, you're seeing your teammates training, you're seeing races on TV. I think that was the hardest thing, just knowing that you should be there, but something's holding you back. But I think, you know, as much as I owe it to everybody's support, you know, you, whenever anyone goes through something like this, you also have to, you know, you have to take your hat off to yourself, because it all comes down to you at the end of the day. So I'm happy, really, looking back how I dealt with it, with the work I put in and everything. So yeah, I'm just happy we're back on track.
And how long were you off the bike altogether?
Probably about 5 or 6 months in total, with all the gaps of surgery and when I couldn't ride with pain. So I'd say probably about 5 or 6 months.
Wow. Because you rode the Tour of the Basque Country and the Tour of Romandy in 2019, didn't you?
Yeah, so that was when I got myself. So I just finished the first block of physio and strength exercises and training in Sport Wales, and I got to a level where I was training okay and pain free. But as soon as I started racing hard, it just came back straight away. I think after the first stage, it started to flare up again, and yeah, it was just. Yeah, just that was shit, to be fair, because there's nothing worse than starting racing than having to go back to, you know, start.
Yeah, and that was before that. So that was before you'd had the kind of final diagnosis, before you had that meeting in London, which actually finally got to the bottom of things. So at that point, you still weren't quite sure why, you know, why things weren't quite going right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So that was, and then I think Romandy finishes May, and then yeah, so a month after that, I was going to London to see the surgeon, and yeah, so that's the story of the knee, really. That's pretty complicated, but yeah, it's also, you know, speaking about it now, and you know, now that I'm back riding, you almost forget how hard it was. But at the time, yeah, pretty awful, really.
Yeah, but as you say, you know, you've kept going through all of that when I guess you could have, you know, chucked it in, given up, you know, decided that it wasn't the right thing for you to keep pursuing. But you've got through it, and you're back on the bike, and I guess you can take enormous strength from that.
Yeah, I think, looking back now, I don't think there was ever a time where I was going to throw the towel in, not a chance, not with not with the not with, you know, the work I put in the years previous of, you know, switching teams, the stress of racing and the stress of all the hard work and all the training. And, you know, you spend all this time working hard and, you know, trying to like, you know, move up and progress to the top of the sport. So I wasn't going to let, you know, a knee injury, you know, not see what I was capable of and, you know, let me have a future in this. So, I guess there probably was times during it, you know, it's easy to say now, but I bet there was a few times where I was close. So, yeah.
Moving on to more positive things, you went back to racing, not too long ago at the Czech Cycling Tour. How was it being back at the races?
Really good. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it was nice to be around the team. Nice to have a bit of normality again. And not being around the team with issues. Just as soon as I got off the flight, I was just like really happy to be there, see the staff that I haven't seen for like a year, see the riders. Just being amongst it and then obviously racing. Got my head kicked in again, to be fair, but first race back in almost 18 months, probably 18 months, maybe 16 months. It was more just happy to be there, to be fair, than anything. I knew I had no, you know, condition to perform, but just to be there was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. And over that period, had you felt like, I mean, you know, to what extent have you felt like part of the team? I mean, has it been difficult to, feel like a complete part of the team during that period?
I don't think so, because the team have always been so supportive. Also, my teammates as well. So there's never been a time where I've been on, like, for example, I was on training camp in Altea in Spain in January. And obviously I wasn't riding, and they just made me feel like, you know, a normal member of the team. It was, there was no sort of, well, there was just no difference me being there. It was just, it treated me like normal. And obviously they knew what I was going through. They were just really supportive of that, both staff and riders. So, just shows really what, how good it is.
What did it feel like just actually being on the start line again at the Czech Tour? I mean, actually just, you know, pinning on a number. How was that emotionally for you?
Yeah, I mean, as I know it's been a long layoff for me, but once I was on the start line, it all came back pretty quick. It just felt like normal again, to be honest, which I didn't think it would be. It just felt like a routine, and it felt like, you know, I belong here again. So it just felt like everything was just in a machine motion again, you know?
So looking, you know, forward to the rest of the season, I mean, I know that the calendar itself is pretty uncertain, but what are your hopes? What are you planning to get out for the rest of the year race-wise?
So for this year now, just get as much solid training in as I can and get as much racing in as I can and just get back to my normal self, to be honest. Just to hopefully, you know, have no issues moving forward and just, you know, find my feet again in the sport and just get back to normal and, you know, just really just look forward to racing and, you know, getting to a level where, you know, I'd still want to be, you know, I'm an athlete. So I want to, you know, even though this is going to be like a slow process, but I also want to be trying to compete in the races as well over the next couple of months, whether it's, you know, doing a job for the team or, you know, just anything, just being at the front of the race and making the most of it again. So, yeah, that's really, really the plan moving forward, is just to, you know, have a good solid rest of the year and hope everything goes okay, which I'm sure it will.
Yeah. And obviously this is the final year of your Neo Pro contract. Do you have any plans for next season? I mean, what how are you approaching it? Or I guess how's it looking for next season in terms of, you know, finding a contract and progressing?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, so my contract goes, it ends at the end of this year. But I think, like, you know, if things go well this year, then hopefully that I'll be able to, basically, I just need to hopefully perform well and stay solid this year and make sure my body's in a good place. And yeah, we'll see what the next few months look like, and then we'll go step by step and see how it goes.
Yeah. And I mean, how confident now you've actually, you know, you've got over this, not fully over the injury, but you've had the operation and you're kind of, you know, back to training fully now. How much do you believe, how confident are you that you can, you know, return to the level you were and kind of, you know, get back to the level that people were talking about earlier, you know, Vlasov and so on? How much do you believe you can reach that kind of level now?
Yeah, I think now with everything going well and, you know, even just being on the bike for the last month, it feels like I'm pretty handy again. I can go okay now. But I think if I can get the next two months in well, and I'm almost certain that I'll be back to a solid level once again, and I'll be able to compete with these guys and compete at the highest level. And and also just, you know, obviously I've missed out the last couple of years with this injury, from, you know, understanding the World Tour and racing and how it's raced. And so it's also time, you know, to learn and stuff as well, and to find my feet. And but I just think a solid rest of the year, and then hopefully things will fall into place and have a bit more luck now moving forward. So yeah, fingers crossed.
And it's been a difficult time, as you said, I mean, almost, you know, pretty dark in places, but to what extent do you think it's kind of changed you as a person?
I think nothing's changed much. I think now I'm a lot more patient, a lot more calm with things, because I don't know, I've had so much time to myself with this injury, and I just think pretty hard to explain, but I think now I've gone through this, it feels like, you know, I'd come out the other side a better athlete and a better cyclist. So hopefully now I can use this motivation, and, you know, it's almost like nothing now will affect me. Obviously things will, but, you know, having gone through this, then, you know, hopefully I'm a lot stronger mentally and physically.
Mm. And I've got to ask, where did it end up with the carpentry?
Oh yeah, I completed my 2 years site and joinery apprenticeship. Got my diploma. So I was on the tools for 2 years. Hopefully won't have to go back to that for too long. But yeah, good trade though. Good to have. Good to fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm
Are you
happy
still handy? I mean, do you still practice a bit of carpentry in your spare time?
Yeah, not really. I've not done it for, when did I finish? It was 2014, so 8 years ago now. So I've forgotten most of it, to be honest. But no, I'm really, really glad I did that coming out of school. Once I left in year 11 to do that, I was thinking it's good to do that when you're a junior and have something else to occupy you. I think it makes you a better all-round cyclist, and, you know, to use your time wisely and stuff. So glad I've got that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Great to have that under your belt. And as you say, hopefully you won't need it for a good time yet, but,
no.
Yeah. Well, I could carry on asking questions for ages, Stevie, but I think we can wrap it up there. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to go through your journey so far, and hopefully there'll be many more years of racing left to cover in your kind of cycling story. But for now, I just want to say a massive thanks, Stevie, for your kind of openness and your thoughtfulness in telling your story. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me as well. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a nice review. You can subscribe on all the usual channels, and you can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at British Conti, and on Instagram, we are at the British Continental. And please do visit our website for more interviews, journals, previews, and news at thebritishcontinental.co.uk.